Secondly, I have recommended consistently that they be an assistant secretary over the Bureau of Indian Affairs and Trust Territories, which are the people programs of the Interior Department. Or the Bureau of Indian Affairs, with the support of the Indian people, could be set up as an independent commission under the direct control of the Congress. And there are many other recommendations that I have made, such as doing away with the agency compounds on Indian reservations, the contracting with Indian tribes of all of the what we call municipal services that are now being performed by Bureau people, such as the operation of the dormitories, the feeding and care of children in the boarding schools, the operation of school buses, road maintenance programs, and eventually, as we have on some reservations, having the Indian people themselves construct the public buildings, which they will own and control, and which are leased back then to the Bureau of Indian Affairs for carrying out the trust and the service responsibilities. In addition to that, of course, is the assistance to the tribes in economic development, both on and off the reservation, broad general training programs, which are so necessary for disadvantaged people, particularly isolated people as Indians are, and finally to support them as they seek by any means they can to retain their culture.
What about the lands that the BIA holds in trust?
The land should be held in trust by the Secretary of the Interior, but I believe the nature of the trust should be changed so that the Secretary of the Interior could protect the title to the property but allow the Indian owners to make decisions with respect to that property except to get rid of it or except to have the state taxing authorities take it over. And this, of course, as you know, a legal profession would be changing the nature of the trust from an active trustee so that the Secretary would be a passive trustee and only protect the title of the property for the Indian owners.
Thank you. Mr. Miller.
Mr. Bennett, you come to us in a rare position. You're not simply an academic expert recommending these reforms. You were commissioner. Why couldn't you institute them then?
They have been instituted in part. We do have two tribes that constructed public buildings, which we now lease as agencies, and so that they, in effect, control the facility. And of course, controlling the facility in the area puts them in a big position of control, and we have several contracts for services which the tribes perform, which the money is received as appropriated by Congress, and this also includes general assistance programs for tribal tribes.
Let me ask you this, because it puzzles me about the budget aspect. The budget of the Bureau of Indian Affairs is roughly $250 million. On a per capita basis, that comes out something to around $500 an Indian or $3,000 per Indian family. If that money, instead of being spent annually in the budget, were distributed on a per capita basis to Indian families, it would instantly raise every Indian family above the poverty level. How is it that the Bureau can continue year after year to spend budgetary amounts of that amount and have no significant impact on the income of Indians?
Well, I think if you take the $3,000 and gave it to each family, then each family has to pay the cost of teachers and construction of roads and the driving of school buses. They probably have less than they have now.
And you think that they would also have to pay the cost of all of the 22,000 employees in the BIA, the enormous cost of administrators in the school system?
Well, they're going to have to pay somebody to teach their children, and they're going to have to pay somebody to drive the school buses, and somebody to feed them, and take care of them.
The relocation program, the Bureau for a while sponsored a relocation program, which the object was not simply to change the status of the Indian lands, but in fact to have Indians move off the reservation and into the larger society. Did you support that program?
Yes, I supported it as one of the options for Indians, and I think that we should have many more programs to increase their options. And also, I've met with many of the young people. I believe as a commissioner, I've met with more non-reservation Indians than any other previous commissioner, and I have from them, and many of their criticisms of the program, which are now being considered in terms of making the program better and more responsive.
Mr. Bennett, you've spoken to us about trusts. Would you say that a trustee that had lost 60% of its land over a period of 70 years, that had the educational record of the BIA, that had sponsored programs like the relocation program that the BIA has sponsored, has violated or fulfilled its trust?
Well, I would say if the Bureau of Indian Affairs hadn't been trustee, it'd been a lot worse. There wouldn't be any lands left.
Well, that's the attorney general.
We should be fortunate that many of the people are in school. And I think we have to put this thing in some kind of a historical perspective, because the Navajo tribe did not start going to school until 23 years ago. And I think their progress has been phenomenal.
Let me cut in now and give the congressman the final question, Mr. Bennett.
Yeah, I think, Bob, it's nice to have you in this position again.
I've been before you before.
There's one problem that's always intrigued me, and that is because of the limited opportunity available to Indians, there really is a very, very limited reservoir of talent at the top, as I call it, people who can honestly go out and compete in non-Indian society. And because of the proximity and parental approach of the Bureau, so many of these good people, these talented people, are absorbed by the Bureau themselves and end up perpetuating the very things that are the problems. Now, you've seen this. In fact, if I may respectfully submit, you are indeed one of these people. In fact, perhaps its most prominent member. Now, what do you think, if the Bureau adopted a policy of encouraging the talented Indian to seek success elsewhere, would that be a responsible policy, or is he better off within the structure of the BIA?
I would say it was a responsible policy because we feel that the Bureau of Indian Affairs, in addition to providing training opportunities for Indians, should provide them with the experience so that they can go in to other agencies, federal, state, and we do have some now that are in the State Department, and we think we are a training ground for the unsophisticated Indians that are being educated in college. And incidentally, the scholarship assistance as a measure of the numbers that are in college, terminated or not, is that we couldn't spend $500,000 about 6 years ago. Now we need $4 million for scholarship assistance.
Well, I have one last question for Commissioner Bennett. Commissioner, in a transcript of a hearing in the Senate on June 8, 1967, in response to a question by Senator Hatfield, who asked you whether the ultimate goal of the Bureau of Indian Affairs, of which you were then commissioner, was termination, your answer was, yes, sir, it is, was it not?
Yes, I said that when any time that the, as a responsible officer in government, that the responsibilities of the government had been fulfilled with Indians, it was my responsibility to report that to the Congress. From then, it was a political decision between the Congress and the tribes whether they were ever terminated. But I knew I wouldn't last long enough to ever have a report when the tribes had
been terminated. Okay, Mr. Bennett. Thank you very much.
You're
okay, we're going to get a question. Does federal control preserve Indian identity? Does it perpetuate Indian dependency? Before this broadcast, the advocates conducted a national public opinion poll on over 1,000 persons across the country. Were asked whether they favored ending or continuing Indian reservations. The results of the advocates poll are as follows. 51% said they should be ended. 31% said they should be continued. 18% had no opinion. Now that's a scientific sample of national public opinion. But for the reaction of a particular group of Indians to this broadcast, we'll go to the Great Dakota Plain. To Vermilion, South Dakota, a state that has 9 Sioux reservations. And Vermilion is also the home of the University of South Dakota and public television station KUSD. For the past 2 days, the University and KUSD have been the hosts for a cultural powwow for a group of Indians from a number of tribes in the Vermilion area. And we've asked Mr. Cato Balandra to tell us something about the makeup of the group at KUSD, what their reaction is to tonight's question. Mr. Balandra is a Rosebud Sioux, was president of the United Sioux Tribes for 8 years. Mr. Blonder, can you tell us who's there now at the power?
Mr. Pomeroy, gathered here in Vermilion are members of 11 tribes in 3 states. They are the Yankton Sioux Tribe, the Oglala Sioux Tribe, the Rosebud Sioux Tribe, Crow Creek Sioux Tribe, the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, Lower Brule Sioux Tribe, the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe, the Turtle Mountain Chippewas of North Dakota, the Omaha Tribe of Nebraska, the Winnebagoes of Nebraska, and the Devil's Lake Sioux of North Dakota. We have some interesting facts about the Indians assembled here. There are 20 men and 18 women. 16 are under 40 and 22 are over 40. 26 live on the reservation, 12 live off. 8 have incomes of less than $1,000 per year. 6 have incomes of over 1,000 but under 3,000 per year. 14 have incomes over $3,000 per year. And we're fortunate to also have one medicine man with us. Just before the broadcast, this group voted, and here is the result of that vote. 34 wanted to continue Indian reservations indefinitely. 4 were opposed. Now, we have voted again. The second vote is 34 want to continue the Indian reservations indefinitely. 4 are still opposed.
Obviously,
you
have no impact.
Some difference between Indians and the country at large on this question is such importance. Let's now have a quick summary from each advocate. You have 15 seconds here.
I want to say to our audience, and particularly our Anglo audience, that we have to listen to what the American Indians are telling us. They want treaty-guaranteed federal cooperation and support to help preserve their heritage and culture.
Mr. Bennett gave us the essential message that he has been giving through the Bureau of Indian Affairs, Indians consistently. Better the devil you've got than the devil you don't know. We think today Indians are ready for no devil. They can own their own land. They can administer their own assets. They should be given that opportunity.
All right, thank you, gentlemen. Well, you at home now have heard both sides of this argument. Now's the time for you to act. Wherever you stand on the question of continuing Indian reservation, you, as a citizen, to make your position felt by writing to us, the advocates, Box 1970, Boston 02134. We'll tabulate your views and make them known to every congressman and senator. And please tell us the station on which you heard this broadcast. Let us know if you want to work with organizations dealing with this issue. And remember that address, the advocates, Box 1970, Boston 02134. Don't be just a spectator, be a participant, and get into the act and write us tonight. 2 weeks ago now, the advocates debated the question, should one half the Federal Highway Trust Fund be used for mass transit? For us. We're going to control them, Congressman, operate to limit the development of the capability for self-government. That seems to me kind of the basic question that came out tonight.
I would say it's fair to say that in most cases the BIA has been more restrictive than productive. But in fairness, I think one thing that wasn't brought out tonight, that when we speak about Indians, we tend to lump them all together. And it's very obvious from our discussion here tonight that the Menominees are very different from the Navajo.
We have many different tribes, many different peoples, all called Indians. Thank you, Congressman Steiger. Thanks to our advocates and our witnesses. Thanks to you. Until next week, good night.
Tonight we have as our guests three gentlemen, representatives of an Indian organization known as the National Indian Youth Council. To my left is Mr. Jerry Wilkinson, HRT Executive Director, Mr. Sam English, Associate Director, Chippewa, and Mr. Bill Pensnall, Eponka President of the organization. Also participating in the discussion will be Mr. Seferino Tenorio, a member of the program committee for the Indian Speaks program. Jerry, I guess we'll start off with you, perhaps for the benefit of our viewers. You can give us a brief history of the NIYC organization and some of its objectives.
I'm very happy to, Dale. The National Indian Youth Council is an organization of 2,000 Indian young people all across the country. The organization was founded in 1961 by a group of returning veterans from the war and from Indian college students and other kind of people who felt that things needed to change as far as Indian affairs go. Who belongs to the council? Well, the council is made up of many different kinds of Indian people. It's an organization run by Indian people through their participation. The word youth is perhaps often misleading. From the beginning, the council has been concerned not to let itself get boxed in by being defined as a young person's organization, as an organization, say, of high school students or college students. Because many of the members who belong to the NIYC are people from Indian communities and reservations where there really isn't any youth. All you have there are Indians of different ages. We have people from 13, 14-year-old age group participating. Also, we have people who are retired BIA employees who participate in doing our certain kinds of projects through the council. Now, the council is nationwide, and we engage in a number of projects. You might say that there are two activities that the council engages in. One activity is on universities and colleges across the country. We have 13 chapters at 13 different universities across the country, and we engage in writing up Indian studies programs and in dealing with problems that the particular students at these institutions face. The second part of the National Indian Youth Council is the community development aspect. And in this aspect, we engage in running programs during the summer and in dealing in all other kinds of issues in various reservations and in Indian